Fall is all about cozy comforts, but when you're prioritizing your health, it's easy to feel like you're missing out. With Hero Bread, you can enjoy all your fall favorites because they're made with Hero Bread sliced bread loaves, tortillas, bagels, dinner rolls, and more. Try their all-new Hero Noodles with 12 grams of protein and just 80 calories. You won't believe Hero Bread's options have 0 to 5 grams net carbs and are high fiber from the taste and texture. They've even got small batch drops of indulgent favorites like the popular Hero Croissant. And right now, Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at HERO.CO. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains 2 to 18 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made to last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Let's talk.
John Brown. You know that I'm a rock person. I'm wearing my Black Sabbath t-shirt today. Obviously, I've been wearing it all week. Yeah, indeed. So, when this one landed on my desk, I was like, okay, because it's kind of not my music, it's kind of not my generation. I feel older as Nebuchadnezzar and all that sort of thing. But this, something tells me this is going to be a good one, because Pop Scars, a memoir on fame, addiction, and the dark side of 90s pop. It's been described as unflinching and unmissable. It is the story of Anthony Kavanagh, and I'm joined by Anthony. Should we call you Anthony Tony Cav Kavanagh? Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. You took me away there when you said hinge and bracket. I don't think I've heard that said for about 20 years. I love it. Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for having me on.
No, pleasure's all mine. It's really interesting because you were the part. I mean, I sort of, you know, I'm 57 now, mate. So
you don't look it.
Yeah, clean living and regular prayer, Cav. That's what did it, you see.
But you should look 100, right?
Pickled myself enough for that anyway. But ditto. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, during that period of the 90s when you were Kavanagh, weren't you? Am I pronouncing that correctly? Yes. Right. And so,
yes, that's right.
Right. So I'm thinking you're up there with, I don't know, because we've had Blee in from Blue, for example, all that sort of time, you know, and the Spice Girls and pop was something. It had gone from sort of Scott Aitken Waterman, which is the 80s, which is my thing. And we had all Kylie and all that lot.
Love it.
And it had become, it got more polished. We had sort of Darius and all that lot as well. And it became this sort of industry that was dominating the charts, and it all looked very sparkly and very wonderful. What was your entry into this? Because you weren't a boy band, were you? I mean, a one-man boy band. So explain to me what your influences were and how you got into the business.
I was end of the 90s, so it was kind of peak pop. It was before X Factor. It was before, you know, you mentioned people like Blue and stuff like that. It was before any of that. So it was literally, it was me in a sea of big pop act. So it was, but my entry into this was, I was 16 years old. I was working at McDonald's, and I'd been fired for stealing a filet of fish, which was always, but it was a silver lining, you know?
Right.
I played the piano. I couldn't read music, and I just loved music. Smash Hits was my Bible. I bought it every 2 weeks.
Right.
And I was just, I had this necessary delusion, I call it, because I look back now and I don't know if it was manifesting, I don't know what the hell it was, but I was just determined against overwhelming evidence to the contrary that I wanted to be a pop star and I wanted to be a performer, and I'd look at the cover of Smash Hits and I'd think, I want to be on there one day. And it was literally like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory golden ticket. I met a well-known music manager one night, a sliding doors moment. He gave me his business card, and I left McDonald's, put it that way.
Now, here's the thing, because for those who don't know how big Smash Hits were, they were massive. I mean, you basically not only had interviews, but you had the lyrics of every song was on Smash Hits, didn't you? And,
yeah.
And for a songwriter, for a musician like yourself, because you weren't one of these, you know, sample stuff, you wrote your own stuff. So you've got that.
Songs.
Would you say that sort of Smash Hits give you that grounding into how to write lyrics?
Maybe. I mean, my sister was, God bless her, she passed away now, but she was a lot older than me, and I grew up listening to her music. So Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder, Songs in the Key of Life, she'd play David Bowie, you know, and then my brother-in-law, my first concert was Talking Heads when I was like 12.
No!
Strange, yeah. Or was it David Byrne from Talking Heads? It was something like that. But so I was always into music, and yeah, so you had the lyrics, but Smash Hits started in the 80s. I mean, it was Neil Tennant was the editor at the beginning, so it was almost slightly highbrow, and then it went more pop. But it was just for 52p, you had this thick catalogue every 2 weeks of this world that I could just enter and just read it cover to cover, you know. So that's definitely got me started, yeah.
And you're in Manchester, and it's just about the right time, because it's the Manchester thing. We've had the Mondays, we've had the Roses, we've been through Oasis. Everybody's looking at you. You've got Hacienda, you've got Tony Wilson doing Factory.
It was the peak, yeah. That was right. I mean, the opening chapter's called Factory Settings, because the nightclub that I get into finally after is Paradise Factory, and that's actually where my fate changes, because I meet this Svengali, and then it all goes from there. But the Manchester music scene was just and is just brilliant. You know, I try and get home as much as I can to Manchester. I love it.
So you go from being the Filio Fish incident, of which we cannot talk of a Friday.
Let's just say it involved a mess up with the till and what they call a warm food bin. So when the food gets lukewarm, you put it in a bin.
Right.
But it's a clean bin, but it's supposed to be thrown away. You mustn't touch it. So, of course, I did touch it and I was caught red-handed. But she did me a favour.
Anyway, so... We digress. But it's a long stop from meetings to having a sliding doors moment to then actually doing something with it and getting a deal. So how quickly does it sort of happen, Kat? What am I calling you by?
Just call me Cav. It's Cav. Easier, all right. I didn't want to call the book Under Pop Scars by Kavanagh, because it's, you know, my name isn't big enough for that. And because I have written it myself, you know, no ghostwriter, I thought it would go under my proper name, you know, Anthony Kavanagh, but people call me Kav.
So, Kav, how quick, you go from that pop stars moment, from that sliding doors moment, and suddenly, is it a very quick transaction? So one day you're meeting somebody, you're going to Paradise, was it Paradise City? In
Paradise Factory.
Paradise Factory, yeah.
It was the old Factory Records building.
Bloody hell, So how quickly does it all sort of take off for you, as it were?
About 18 months. Wow. The manager's first thing said to me, you need to write your own songs. You can write your own songs, can't you? And I went, yeah. So he bought me a little studio, little Porter studio. I'd go home and write songs every night in my bedroom, which eventually made the first album. Signed to Virgin Records. After about 18 months, you're in the studio, you're with the songwriters, you're coming to London for the first time, they're putting me in hotels. I'm from a council house in Manchester, so I'm suddenly in London as an 18-year-old kid, you know. And the first two singles didn't do anything. And it was like, because I signed my deal the same time as the Spice Girls. And it was going to be me that was the instant hit, not the Spice Girls. They suddenly they blow up. But I suppose, you know, obviously I'm here to talk about the book, and I'm so pleased that you read it. The whole point of this book was I wanted to write about what happens. It's more about what happens after fame and the length that someone like me, who is, an alcoholic in recovery. I didn't know it at the time, but I had that ism and I had that desire for more constantly and approval, you know, and the lengths that I went to try and keep that fame, which was, I look back now and there's a lot of dark humour in the book, but, you know, I found myself in some pretty unfavorable situation.
The thing is, Kav, though, it's you know, and listen, the listeners know my, you know, most of my stories as well. And it's, right. it's, you know, it's addiction is addiction is addiction, right? And it's that, you know, hole in the soul and wanting, and it's the thing, yes. a thing and more in the whole situation. Now, I couldn't be doing what I do now and having a brilliant life and doing radio shows because I would be, by this time of the day, I'd be going, you know what, I really want to do something different this weekend and fall off my stool. You're right. But,
absolutely.
And that's offered, you know, and we can talk about sort of drink and drug addictions and whatever, but the addiction of being in front of a crowd and doing a performance. And I do MC and stuff like that. And that's quite a buzz as well. But to go in front of a Top of the Pops audience or a live audience, that is a buzz like no other. If you're performing right. live music, to have that taken away or to lose that, then you're going to want something bleeding strong to try and to self-medicate it, Kev.
Absolutely. And I didn't realize that what, alcohol, I mean, look, it started with alcohol and it finished with alcohol when I ended up homeless sitting in a skip. I mean, literally, that's in the book. And I don't say that's for shock value. It's just literally where it took me, you know?
Yeah.
I nearly swore then.
It's all right.
But it's that, you know, I did drugs and drugs are a part of my story, as we say, in recovery. But alcohol was where it started and it, I got in the ring there every time, as we know, and it beat me. But yeah, I think you're... development gets arrested maybe as well at that. Don't these, you know, suddenly you're getting all this acclaim and applause, but at 21 it stopped. Now I explain why in the book. People just sometimes think, oh, he was a one-hit wonder, he disappeared, and it's like, well, we don't often hear why. And I don't say it in a martyrish, you don't know what happened to me. I mean, I was very ambitious. I was also quite delusional because I decided that, you know, there was no jungle to go in those days, right, to resurrect your career. So when your eighth single is only getting in the lower parts of the top 40 and the record label are a bit like, don't know what to do, I took it upon myself. Don't we call it a geographical, don't we?
Yeah, it's locational, yeah. I'm going to France.
I'm going to move to Hollywood because I'm going to be a star over there. They'll get me.
Yeah.
And give me a great few chapters of the book. So I went to move to LA for 7 years. But guess what? I took my addiction with me.
No, you mean the land of the morning margarita? You mean that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that all started wonderfully too until it didn't. And I come back with a transatlantic accent, a suntan, and not a Benito Mineo.
But here's the thing, Kev, because it's difficult enough for many of us to try and get ourselves sober anyway for the best of times. Yeah. Hardest thing you'll ever do. If it wasn't, then we wouldn't have to do what we do to keep ourselves sober. Yeah, but you get us, you are in the business where people say you're wonderful all the time. Doesn't matter if you are, And I always like the people who say, "Oh, he's just a one hit wonder." And it's like, well, that's one hit more than I'm going to produce. Trust me on this one, Kev. I mean, greatest of respect. You know what I'm saying?
Right, thank you. Yeah.
But you know, because so many people go out there, and it's the hardest thing to do to play music in front of people. But so you're in the pop business. People saying, "Oh, you're great, you're wonderful." You know, champagne. It's a lifestyle. Rock and roll. You're young. You're immortal. You don't think. And then you go to LA, which is like that on steroids, literally. You know, you're so how do you get your mindset? Or you couldn't get your mindset because presumably it was like, well, I'm living my dream, not knowing that actually you're just living the role that's been done hackneyed time and time again, and you're not exciting and different and breaking the rules. You've just been a bit sad and pathetic, really, as we all are at that point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I write about some happy times in the book in my LA story. And, you know, I did meet some friends for life. You know, I did. There's a bit where I write about when I landed there and I was like, I'm going to be an actor. I'm going to be this. I'm going to be that. And of course, within the first week, I do book an acting role. So I think, oh my God, I'm made. The Oscar's coming next. I mean, it was in a soap opera, which was seen by about five people late night on MTV. But, you know, and it's these kind of gallows humor stories that kept me, that have given me material for the book.
Did they love the accent, by the way, when you were over there?
Oh, they love the accent, yeah. They'd say, oh, you're just like Hugh Grant. You know, like, can you say whoops-a-daisy? Give me a drink and I'll give you whatever you want. No, I was just going to say, I did not know that I had this condition. I mean, people call it the disease of addiction, don't they? I kind of break that down as a dis-ease. So I had an unease with life. I couldn't quite put my finger on it.
Yeah.
But I know that alcohol, for me, I realise now, it affected me very different than it does maybe the regular drinker, because it lit me up like a Christmas tree, right? It gave me everything that I wanted.
Yeah.
But the only thing is, it also gets really drunk, sloppy, and I have this physical craving that... The craving doesn't start when I have... You know, the craving for a drink, and this is what I couldn't get my head around for years, 2 decades, loss of houses, you name it, took me right to the skip, literally, at the end. What I didn't understand was that when I took a drink, it immediately started this phenomenon of craving for another one and this obsession of the mind for another one.
Yeah.
And I thought everybody had that. But they don't.
People say to me, but you're really funny, and I bet you'd be really funny when you're drinking the whole thing. It's like, yeah, but I could never, you know, you and I could probably go out, Kevin. We could have a champagne, and it wouldn't be a problem. But it's the Russian roulette, isn't it? It's like having the one loaded chamber. Right. Or we could be perfectly lucid and have a great time. Or we could both end up in a skip in 3 days' time, quoting Shakespeare and Stone Roses lyrics to each other.
You know what? Absolute quoting Shakespeare and Stone Roses. I love the mix of those two. That is so me, yeah. But you know where it is as well?
What?
You hit the nail on the head. It's the Russian roulette.
Yeah.
Because that was the baffling thing. So people would go, but you was fine last night. You didn't... I'm like, oh, yeah, but you didn't see what happened when I went home and I have two more bottles and I blacked out and called my auntie in Australia, who I've not spoken to for 20 years, and told her I was going there today. You know, like... And that's just one of the lighter, you know, things that I would get up to. But, I got to a point where I'd had enough consequences and enough quote-unquote rock bottoms that you have to kind of just... surrender, right? And we know that's when the light gets in, when you just have that little moment of going, do you know what? I think I'm done. But it had to, it was insidious and it was very clever.
Yeah.
And but it's no coincidence that for 10 years I've tried to do a book and it's only happened since I got sober.
Yeah.
You know, like we said, we're having this conversation now.
Yeah.
This wouldn't be happening. Right.
Well, it might be happening, but there'd be nothing for anyone to listen to. And also, you're up there and you've got thousands of little girls screaming at you, and there's your true self, isn't there, as well? Because you deal with sexuality in the book as well, don't you, Kev? So, if you're being the object of desire for little, you know, teenage girls, but actually, you know, you had to, you know, I mean, listen, as alcoholics, we live a lie anyway. I mean, every bleeding day. But if you're living a lie and then you have that as well, you know, I'm not saying, you know what I'm trying to say here, Kev?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I was a closeted teen idol. That's it in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Because there was nobody my age that was out.
Yeah.
Stephen Gately was forced out of the closet maybe about 2 years after I'd come on the scene. But at the time... At that point, I think I was wrapping up my career and ready to move to you know, I was in the bargain bin at that point. But, yeah, there was... So I was dealing with that or not dealing with it by medication. Hotel minibars and going to, you know... And a lot of my circle were older than me.
Yeah.
Because, like you say, I wasn't in a boy band, so I didn't have that camaraderie. Maybe I wouldn't want to be in a boy band anyway, but I didn't have the camaraderie or one of the band members to go, look, mate... You need to get back to your room tonight because there was nobody really telling me. So I'd hang out with the older circle, the photographers, the stylists, the this, the that, and my new best friends. And, you know, it would go on my card at the end of the night when it's 3 a.m. and you all come back to my room, my new best friends, you know, that kind of thing.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it wouldn't be an issue. I mean, we're living now, thank goodness, in more enlightened times. And I know this is only sort of, it's only the 90s, but it is an entirely different thing. I mean, you look at Eurovision now and look at the, you know, the gender fluidity and whatever you identify as, which is great, fine, knock yourself out. But back then, you couldn't do it. You know, there was the Bronskys and there was Neil Tennant and Frankie, and that was kind of it. And they were like, you know, or everything else was like, oh, kind, cuddly, homosexual sort of thing. I mean, you know, you couldn't have that. And as for being, you know, sort of like, you know, being a stone butch or something, that was completely out of the window. There was no way that was going to happen, apart from K.D. Lang sort of situation.
Yes, absolutely. Who I was told I looked like as a teenager, which was a strange but candid compliment of some kind.
Okay,
but
yeah, anyway,
we don't know. But I love Katie Lang. In fact, here, the funny that you said that on my way to rehab.
Yeah, here we go. Yeah,
this didn't go.
A funny thing happened to you on the way to rehab.
On the way to rehab, my last I went to two because apparently you need two to write a memoir.
Yeah,
but on my last rehab, where I was literally at death's door, like not in a good way.
Yeah,
and this wonderful guy from the fellowship that we go to, you know, the those meetings, the 12-step meetings.
Frodo and all that lot.
So he drove me, God bless him, for 2 hours to this private rehab, which was very lucky to get into, because I'd suddenly out of the blue come into some money. That's another story to pay for it. But we're driving there, and I noticed he had a CD. I had a bottle of wine in my lap because obviously I needed
last
it.
Last one before you go to rehab.
Last one.
Absolutely.
You know, really wanted to go that entrance, you know. And I saw he had the KD Lang Ingenue album in the car. Ooh. And I insisted that he play Constant Craving all the way up the motorway. And he said, I can never listen to Constant Craving again. Now I look back and think it was actually quite an apt title for a song.
Genius.
So the fact he said KD Lang.
Genius. Yeah. You got it. It's got a bit of... So, you know, because, you know, my life is like, I've been catapulted to a fourth dimension. And, you know, my life is no different now. But,
oh, yeah.
But I don't know, it's a cliche. But the reason people cliches is the fact that, you know, I mean, you look, I can see you. Hello. You know, when we look healthy, we look happy. We you know, but the thing is, it's not a pink fluffy cloud and life will still throw you curveballs, Cav. But you've got to be able to sort of deal with it. And is that one of the aims of the book? To not say, you know, I made it back from the brink and you can say, just say, look, this is life. This is my truth, Cav, if you like.
Sure. And, you know, so, people are connecting to it the way that I have. Those that have read it, right, have connected to it for the right reasons. You're still going to get your trolls. Here he is, another one moaning about his mental health. It's like, no, you're missing the point. It's actually not that if you would, and you know, so it's not a fluffy clink, a fluffy pink cloud.
Glad you got that right. That could have been very interesting on a Friday morning, Cap, but thanks for that.
You've been sober. But I'd like to think it's about hope. And also it's a story, it's a human story as well, I think, you know, about silver linings, about of course it's got that pop nostalgia in it and stuff like that, but mainly, like I said, it's about what happens after fame. But you know, my mother still has Alzheimer's, my sister still died, my father still died. I still have issues with other stuff, but I don't drink on it today. Yeah.
How vulnerable do you think modern kids are? Because, I mean, this is 30 years ago, but luckily through Clean Living Regular Player, you look like you're 18, Cav. But
I love you for that, so I'll give you that money after this.
Thank you very much.
You do as well. There you go.
Right, so, but we are now we've now got X Factor, Pop, whatever, this, that, and the other, Strictly Come Dancing, MasterChef on Ice, whatever you want to call it. And we've got these young kids who come in, not singer-songwriters, they're suddenly famous, or by you, and then the next thing, they're not. And we are raising, or we are putting, you know, in K-pop artists in Korea are dying, are committing suicide because they cannot handle the pressures. So in a way, is this sort of going to hopefully, I mean, I'm not saying that you wrote up this thing, but would you agree that we're not equipping these poor young, because they just want to be stars. They just want to be famous. And we all wanted to be famous when we were kids. But
sure.
You know, you've got to have a long, hard look, haven't we? You've got to have a long, hard look and try and do something about this, Kath, because otherwise, and that's maybe your book's going to help in some way.
You know, I mean, I would love that. And people have been mentioning that in interviews and stuff. I mean, I'm no oracle and I'm not as big as some much bigger names who maybe have a much louder voice than me. But if that can be, you know, I'd be more than privileged to go and help or chat to people or do talk somewhere about it. But, you know, when you're with a pub, so this is the first thing I've had out for a long, long time, probably the most important thing I've ever done, because I've written a whole book, like not just a couple of songs. So. Yeah. It's all in there. I mean, you know, there's some pretty. I'm oversharing in parts, to say the least, right? Always about me, not about others. But so the publishers are wonderful, but of course they want you to promote it. So I ventured onto TikTok the other night, and it's like Wild West on there. And I'm looking at, I'm doing a video of this book, my book, and then suddenly I'm looking for the likes. I can't help it. I'm going back. I'm getting the dopamine hit. 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm scrolling last night. So everyone said lovely things. One man said, has been, well, I didn't like that. So I started messaging him back at 2 a.m. I'm like, what am I doing?
You need to do a book tour, Cav. You need to do a book tour.
Yes, couple exactly.
Of evenings with Cav. I can see
well,
it now.
Well, we've got a couple of them sorted, you know, but right. My mind says no one's going to come. But, you know, that's that negative thought, which I have to do every morning. I have to redirect my thinking and say, right, I pray to a God that I don't understand. And I say, you drive today, please, because I drove myself into a skip with something in my mouth that I smoked, not anything else.
The book is called whoops, the book is, it's only Friday morning, Cav. The book is, well, it's Friday, hey, what the hell. The book is, yeah. Listen, what was the high, you know, I mean, I know people, because you get these people do these memoirs, it's like, oh my God, my life is terrible, but there are high, even in the madness, there are high points. So when you look back fondly, is it looking across a concert and going, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing? I mean, we know that you're happy, you're sober. That's, I mean, I'll take that every day of the week. Doesn't matter. But there must have been a point in the 90s you go, that was me in the 90s, in a good way.
Yes. Smash It, winning the Smash It's Award, best male artist, dressed as Superman, Super Cav. That was probably the absolute iconic dream. And that happened. You know, I was able to buy my parents a house. That was unbelievable.
Oh.
But you know what I'm going to say, and this is why, without giving any spoilers, I ended the book with a chapter where it's just me and my mum. And I genuinely mean this, because that poor woman saw me in some terrible states, right? And she has Alzheimer's and she doesn't recognise me anymore. But the biggest gift of all is that I get to be present with her. And I sit with her and I hold her hand and I talk to her. And sometimes she looks at me and I can think, she sees me, I think she recognises me. And it's just beautiful. And they're the moments that make it worthwhile. Look, it's great to be being creative and have something out and to be doing stuff. But we know it's just stuff, don't we, for people like us. It's fleeting. So it's just good to feel good.
The book is called Pop Scars, a memoir on fame, addiction, and the dark side of 90s pop. It's by Anthony Kavanagh. You can order it via our own virtual bookstore. Cav, are you, I mean, apart from TikTok, that one person, from TikTok, what social, I mean, are you on the Instagram? Are you on the gram?
I am on Instagram, yeah. My old one got hacked when I was in a blackout because I gave the wrong password. So we have a new one now. So I would love people to follow me if you don't mind, because I'm needy.
Go for it. What's
Kavanagh?
It called?
So it's Kavanagh, K-A-V-A-N-A, _real, R-E-A-L, Kavanagh _real. I'm on there and I chat to people in DMs and I'm very active on there. Kavanagh _real, I'd love to say hello to you. Thank you.
The book is called Pop Scars. It's by Anthony Kavanagh. Anthony, Cav, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you this morning.
Oh, what a lovely way to start the day.